Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and also founder of Yes to Life, which is the UK charity supporting people with cancer in understanding their options within integrative medicine and in accessing the best services. My guest on the show this week is Heather Mason, founder of the Minded Institute. Heather is a powerhouse of enthusiasm for the benefits of yoga and mindfulness in meeting a host of life's challenges, including a diagnosis of cancer, and she works tirelessly to increase awareness of and access to high-quality resources. Hi, Heather. Thanks so much for agreeing to be my guest on the Yes Life Show.
Thank you, Robin. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm honored to be here.
So you've had an enormously energetic and focused career in yoga and mindfulness, driven, I think, by your own personal experience early on in life. It looks like a great story. I wondered if you just tell us about it.
Okay. Well, I'll try and give you a whistle-stop tour because that is quite a long story.
Okay.
But I will start by saying that from a very early age, I suffered from a host of mental health issues, anxiety, depression, and what I would later discover was PTSD. And while I was living in New York, where I'm originally from, I didn't have any skills to manage my mental health difficulties. And I was adverse at that time to medication. But I had always had an interest in yoga and Buddhism. And I actually ended up, at the age of 23, when I was really in mental health crisis, going to Southeast Asia and also to India, living in monasteries and ashrams, devoting my entire life to practice. And the transformation that happened was incredibly profound. And I actually was going to ordain as a Buddhist nun. I ended up in the UK to do a master's degree before ordaining. I just wanted some like academic grounding because I'm still a skeptic at heart. And it brought me back into the world, and I really wanted to share some of my insights with people. But because my practice had been so intense living in monasteries and ashrams, I needed to find a different avenue. And I discovered that talking to people about being with discomfort in their bodies in physical postures that they could easily exit was a wonderful way for them to start to be with uncomfortable feelings safely. That it would also direct their mind's attention to their body and reduce rumination. And they would start to see the connection between their breath, their mind, and their movement. And so that took me down this path further. I had become a yoga teacher in those years in Asia. Mm-hmm. And then I did also study in psychotherapy, but I felt that I didn't want that to be my primary profession because it didn't have a focal point in the body, and I understood already the profound value of not just somatic awareness, but yoga. I trained in this new profession in 2007 called yoga therapy, which is focused on the therapeutic application of yoga to health conditions, but it's not just that. It draws on the disciplines of psychotherapy, physiotherapy, and also medical knowledge and science. And then I just kept going because I really wanted to help people. I had suffered so profoundly. Mm. And, you know, I'm not afraid to say that I wanted to end my life when I was 23. So wow. I just wanted to go deeper. So then I did a degree in neuroscience so I could understand how does movement affect the brain in particular ways, changing the breath, mindfulness. And from that, you know, I was already working with clients for quite a while. People wanted me to develop a training. I guess, you know, I had a unique set of skills starting to emerge. So I created the Minded Institute in 2009 and started training yoga and health professionals first, just to work with mental health issues. And then the Institute grew to work with a host of health issues that yoga therapy is efficacious for, including in cancer care. Then I went and I did another degree in medical physiology, really right. Because not because I wanted to just have letters, but because I think that yoga is so potent and I wanted to be able to speak to the healthcare profession about it within their language and also understand the pathways so that I wasn't simply you know, expressing things that were maybe considered new agey or didn't have an evidence base. My institute has grown and grown over the years. I got involved in creating an all-party parliamentary group to try and advocate for yoga's inclusion into healthcare, education, and other things. And I'm really just continuing on that journey because I have seen it, how it impacts me. I've trained students, and they've had so many clients who have been impacted. I've had my own clients. And basically, it's just there's more and more and more that becomes scalable and noticeable in terms of benefiting people that really need help.
Extraordinary. So this personal experience of yours has really sort of melded the idea that the yoga therapy is way beyond anything physical and is actually good for the whole person in this way. And obviously a very powerful tool, in fact, to combat some very serious conditions.
Absolutely. And I think that we are looking very much in society for things that are biopsychosocial, but we don't necessarily have models for that. And actually, yoga therapy, and this isn't going to be a whole lecture of yoga therapy for me, but yoga therapy sees the person through five lenses. And those five lenses are areas of focus to support the person. That's the body, the breath, and energy. And energy is so important, right? When we're talking about cancer and cancer fatigue, the mind, discernment, and the ability to trust oneself, and then bliss or the lack thereof. So it creates a perfect, very individualized care plan for people. And also there's yoga where you can have classes that help people without it being this additional profession of yoga therapy. So both offer great value for health in general and for people who have just been diagnosed, who are currently being treated and in remission from cancer.
Fantastic. You mentioned this all-party parliamentary group you're part of. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. What's it all about? What have you managed to achieve?
So it was created, I think it was in 2016. And I had already been in contact with lots of parliamentarians, MPs, and also peers, discussing the value of yoga within healthcare. That was really what I wanted to bring forth. And there was already a very potent all-party parliamentary group on mindfulness. And many of the members of that, the parliamentarians, were also interested in yoga. So we talked about how through such a group, we could identify bills that were already being pushed through or conversations that were occurring or select committees, and how we could identify different areas through which yoga might be able to be part of the discussion. What did we achieve? I think we achieved a much greater appreciation of the value of yoga. I didn't see direct policy changes emerge, but I did see a change in understanding, zeitgeist, as a result of it. And also, The parliamentarians wanted us to create an organization that existed in the world to engage in actions. So the Yoga and Healthcare Alliance was created.
Okay.
And that organization was given funding by the West London Clinical Commissioning Groups, when those still existed, to create a special yoga social prescribing course, which they evaluated. And the outcomes were really not just encouraging. I don't want to overstate evidence because I'm a science person, but you know, it was really compelling, which has allowed us to scale that program through yoga teachers that wanted to train to teach it throughout the country. I think that that's been a huge achievement. And all of the other areas like yoga in prisons, education, I think that it gave an opportunity to people who were leading in their movements to come together to speak, to empower them to go back into their communities. But unfortunately, when we had the re-election through Rishi Sunak, many of the parliamentarians who were the officers lost their seats. And I decided to put my energy into continuing to work with the community because we already have a lot going on, rather than trying to reform the group again at this point.
Right. Anyway, social prescribing, a great thing, and quite a breakthrough, really, in terms of UK healthcare. And yeah, brilliant place for you to sort of get on board with, I can see. So you have practitioners who you've trained all over the country who are available for social prescribing.
Yep.
Excellent.
Yoga and healthcare practitioners, they teach what we call the Yoga for Health program. And by the way, Paul Fox, who's the CEO, and he really leads that effort. He also, with some doctors who are directors of the board of directors, created Yoga for NHS. And they've taken almost 1,000 NHS staff for a yoga program.
Now you're talking. How great is that? Hey, that, excellent.
It's amazing. And he does it for free. I want everyone to know that. He does it for free.
This is the only way you get these things in the NHS. It's ridiculous, but whatever works, eh? But yeah, excellent to actually support the staff, because of course the staff, A, they need it, and B, once they know what it does, they realize that it's what their patients need. Yeah.
It's the biggest predictor, actually. People think it's having the evidence, but we've done surveys, the yoga community. It's the biggest predictor that they will refer their patients, even if there are not referral pathways, as their experience.
Right. I'm very pleased to hear that. Yeah, the old thing about there's got to get the evidence and everything. But, you're right. They can just walk straight past the evidence for years, take no notice at all. But, yeah, personal experience, that's the thing. But it's very difficult to break through the barrier, if you like, of the NHS, which is so self-contained, and find a way in to actually get some experience of that kind to the practitioners in the healthcare services. It's a tough call.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Actually, that brings me to one other thing you asked about the APPG.
Yeah.
I was teaching yoga and yoga therapy to the parliamentarians. So they also had the lived experience.
Excellent.
And that made a difference.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It would do.
Yeah.
Very good. Now, look, I want to hop right back to the beginning now and just ask a little question. Is why did we get lucky in the UK? What happened to New York?
I don't know. I was never really a lover of New York. At the age of 7, I asked my mother why we lived there. I wanted a warmer climate. Not that the UK is much warmer.
Not much, but a bit.
But I'm not embarrassed to say that I had a very tumultuous childhood. And part of the reason that I wanted to leave was I needed to create a life for myself outside of that. And I needed to find a way to be well outside of the confines of that.
Right, right.
So why did you get lucky? Well, also because you have the School of Oriental and African Studies, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And when I wanted to do a master's degree in Buddhist studies, I looked all over the world. There are about 8 in the Western world, and this one looked the coolest. So that's why I did it.
There you go.
And I loved it.
Right.
I loved it.
Very good. Okay, so if there's one thing that characterizes your efforts, it's the desire to make yoga and mindfulness mainstream, commonplace go-tos for everyone in need of help with mental issues. So within my lifetime, if for some practices that were totally foreign to the UK, they come from a completely different culture, the inroads that are made by yoga and meditation are actually stunning. So apart from your Herculean efforts, what's behind this success story, do you think?
In the UK?
Yeah.
Well, firstly, mindfulness, and not everybody knows this, and I think this information is still up to date. Mindfulness is more integrated into the UK health system than any country in the entire world.
Is that right?
That's something to really celebrate.
It is.
And there's many reasons for that. But one of them, I believe, is that the all-party parliamentary group on mindfulness was started by parliamentarians who are actively practicing to deal with their own stress. And they took, and this is before COVID, because I don't know what statistics changed after that. They took 200 parliamentarians through the mindfulness-based stress reduction program.
Really?
Which is what was codified to bring into healthcare. That had huge implications, right, in their willingness to impact policy. I think that there was just like this real interest in the mindfulness movement because research was happening. brain research or neurological research in 2005 came out showing that mindfulness actually was changing brain functioning. That was a really big deal. And in terms of yoga, I think there's just so many reasons. First of all, there's a huge Indian community in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And not all Indian people practice yoga, but many of them do. It is the origin of this incredible practice. I think that that's part of it. I think that there was a recognition before yoga became perceived as exercise, the value of it for stress relief. And you also have Jung. You know, all the way back in the day, he was talking about yoga in terms of being able to use modern language, self-actualize. So he brought it into the field of psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And here and there, you know, including with the Theosophical Society, there were little like dots of people that started to practice. And I think that those dots became more and more copious, creating threads. And if we come to the current time, yoga has become trendy. That really helps with it being spread because people think, oh, I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yoga is offered in gyms, so it's accessible to people that might not go to a yoga studio. And then there's been this shift, and we've seen it in surveys, where there's a real recognition that yoga leads to stress relief. And we are at a pandemic level of stress throughout the world. And it's systemic.
I know.
You know, you can go to a class, become more flexible, stronger, more balanced, and relieve stress without having also to admit that you might be experiencing anxiety, which a lot of people may not be comfortable doing yet. They may not be at the threshold for a full diagnosis. So, I mean, this is a question I could answer for the next 20 hours, but those are some of the reasons.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, it has this quality of being a bit of a spectrum, really, doesn't it, yoga? It goes from like just exercise at one end, but actually, you know, very, you know, you're talking about self-actualization at the other end of the scale. So, and everything in between, of course, and you can move along that scale as you get engaged in it as well. So there's a lot going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very interesting.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
What you said about stress in this country, it shouldn't be taken lightly. I mean, what strikes me is what we're used to in this country. We think of as normal. You know, I got the results of this huge study on a really big study on all the developed nations, and out of I think around 80 nations, the UK is bottom equal with Ukraine
and Uzbekistan.
Oh, I don't know about them, but
Yes. But, I saw that too.
I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. I mean, you know, Ukraine, they've got a reason to be stressed and depressed, haven't they? I mean, let's face it, we're ours is just normal life in Britain is that bad. And we're used to it. We actually just go along with it and probably don't notice quite how bad it is. But I think it's time to wake up and realize that we need some good support for our mental health, probably most people.
Yeah. And if I can bring that back to the social prescribing piece, I mean, it's interesting, right? First of all, this is the only country that has a minister of loneliness, which in itself speaks to the problem of, you know, that sense of feeling isolated, which is one of the prime reasons that we find these statistics that you're talking about. And social prescribing is a response to that. We're actually having to prescribe people to go to activity groups, because we know that when people are doing things that they enjoy with like-minded people, they take better care of themselves. But actually, there's some kind of cardiovascular neurological regulation. And the Westland and CCG, when they commissioned the Yoga and Healthcare Alliance to create a social prescribing yoga course, were recognizing the unique value of yoga. Because you have to understand, right? Social prescribing, you referred into community activities. So yoga already existed, but there was an appreciation that yoga, if focused on social prescribing as its goal, increasing socialization, could respond to some of the problems that are leading to the mental health challenges that we're finding. And the breathing in particular that you find in yoga helps the nervous system to relax profoundly. It's more influential in changing mental health parameters than the movement. And there has been some really interesting theories, such as polyvagal theory, that says when you activate certain nerves through breathing, like your vagus nerve, you activate your what they call social engagement network, your ability to actually more effectively socialize with people.
Interesting.
So when we created the Yoga for Health protocol for social prescribing, we built in things that would not just be beneficial based on what yoga already offers for mental health, which is huge, but what would activate that social engagement network. And then have a discussion at the end so that people could connect with each other when their bodies already felt safe and relaxed. And the relationships that developed were profound. Mm. It was amazing.
Fantastic. So you brought in the element of group work there, which, of course, is magic. We were massive fans of group work at Yes to Life. All sorts of different forms of, and we find they're amazingly therapeutic in a host of ways, and that's a very deep level for people. So, yeah, brilliant. All right, so now I'd like to come back to the pairing of yoga and mindfulness that is obviously really your thing here. There's reams of material attesting to the benefits of both yoga and mindfulness for people generally, but also for people with cancer, both of those. So can we talk a little bit more now about the synergies involved in working with both together or in parallel for somebody who's facing a situation like cancer, which includes existential distress, for example?
Absolutely. Okay. So firstly, it's important to note that mindfulness is an inherent component of yoga. And although yoga in the gym might not ostensibly seem to have mindfulness, when you have to experience your body as you're holding a pose that is a little bit challenging, you start to pay attention to your body. And that in itself, because you can't help it, is mindfulness. But what you're talking about is formal mindfulness and bringing it together with yoga. Right. And what that does is allow, especially if you're in a yoga class, rather than talking right now about yoga therapy, for a teacher to cue people to pay attention to their mind and body in very particular ways, because within mindfulness, you're watching what the mind does, ideally, but this is difficult, non-judgmentally, and just seeing the process. Now, if you're talking about existential angst and terror that you would have often with a cancer diagnosis, that's not going to be something that is immediately available. But if you go to a yoga class that is soft and gentle, and the teacher is trained to work with cancer, part of what comes in through the mindfulness aspect, not just the movement, is, okay, so notice in this posture what's happening with your mind. Bring your mind to the here and now, because of course, a diagnosis of cancer is terrifying and simply catastrophizes into the future. So one of the values of mindfulness is to learn to bring us back to the present moment, where right now, even if we're in the middle of treatment, we're here, right? The inevitable has not happened. The other thing is, at a higher level, and that takes more time, we start to watch our mind going into those patterns of distress. And we say, I know you. You're going to go and tell me I'm not going to be okay tomorrow. I know you. And instead, I'm going to bring my mind back to my breath or to the sensations in my body. Or instead of just being mindful, I'm going to have been mindful and bring my mind to something that makes me feel safe. For me, it's my dog, you know? So there's a huge value in that. And then to go beyond the existential piece, you know, if one has had treatment for cancer, there can be trauma, disconnection from the body, fear around the body, a sense of even being like the body has somehow failed us. So there can be a very gradual titration of coming back into contact with the body, feeling into it through mindfulness, and then a bit of regulation that comes with yoga. So, okay, you've had breast cancer, you've had a mastectomy, you know, paying attention to that area of the body brings up all kinds of feelings. So let's be there for a second, very gently. Now let's breathe, calming the nervous system, and then let's move away from that now, so that we can come in and out and so that we can be mindful of the body. We can re-inhabit the body that is ours and feel what we regained, a sense of agency. Because I know this is a powerful word, but I think people can feel forsaken by their bodies.
Mm. Yes, I absolutely agree. Ian, and part of that is the narrative of cancer, which I don't entirely believe. Which is that cancer is your own body attacking you. And that's actually not science as it stands, I don't think. It's just a story we've been told for many years. And I don't really believe it. My experience of the body is it's always, 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 however badly we treat it, doing its very best to keep us well, whole, strong under all circumstances. And so that's why I don't quite believe that narrative. But it's a powerful one. And in terms of, dividing people against themselves, I mean, everybody suffers from division internally, and this is like amplifying it on steroids. You know, it's just like much worse to actually think of physically part of you is attacking you, and a very difficult story to deal with. So something that can reintegrate all of that and make you feel whole again and begin to trust, marvelous thing.
Yeah, and that really touches me, what you've just said. And that idea that the body is attacking oneself and the feelings and the beliefs that arise, you know, in the work that I do and with the education that I have, although the body is prone to illness as well, it is absolutely amazing that we manage to be alive all the time, that all of these cells are conspiring to work together in all of these different processes. And amongst the things that can be scary and can lead to real health problems, it's important to remember that. And I think that especially when we've come out of treatment, coming to grips with this is my body and it's still here and it's allowing me to continue to move becomes a really important narrative to shift. I agree with you that that old narrative doesn't work, but I think that there are very specific narratives that are important for people to adopt, although everybody has their own journey.
Right.
And I think yoga and mindfulness can really help with that.
Great. All right. Very good to hear.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You told us in your story how basically your own enthusiasm for yoga and mindfulness, it was part and parcel of this Buddhist spiritual journey. So I want to find out how the spiritual aspect sits in relation to the work that you're doing through the Minded Institute.
Ooh, that's a complicated question. I think that, firstly, as I said, when you suffer and then you feel like there's been a change, you often want to help somebody. You know, aside from the spiritual ideology, when I lived in those monasteries in Southeast Asia, primarily, you meditate every waking hour. You have a form of meditation to do while you eat, in fact. And there is no relief from the mind. It is constant. You know, you can choose to leave. Nobody's making you stay, but there is no relief. And so I cannot express the excruciating nature of sitting through that kind of mental distress that you already have when the mind is not developed. And so that brought me to the darkest aspects I could have possibly imagined, but I was in a community of support that mattered, right? And I wasn't paying for it. That matters even more. It's just like a community you can show up in and practice in Asia. So when you go to that level, it brings up compassion when you come out. You know what it can be like to suffer.
Right.
And it doesn't, in any manner of ways. And it gives you a level of compassion and empathy that I don't want to put myself up on a pedestal of anybody else, but I don't think you can have if you haven't sat with your pain unabated for like months at a time in silence. So that informed my desire to really help people. And also, and this is a Buddhist adage, when you know your own mind, you know the mind of others. And it's not to say that you know everybody else's experience, but I have found first in the client work I did and then with my students, when they're struggling, I can connect to them at a level that they will say they may not have been able to experience with somebody else because I know the ground of suffering. And I also know that the mind, that there are so many different techniques based upon what's presenting in this moment for this kind of person that can help them shift just from where they are, 1 degree different, to feel slightly different than 1 degree more, than 1 degree more, than 1 degree more. And so I guess the answer is, gave me that level of understanding and empathy. And it also gave me insight as to how to teach people to work with their minds when they were expressing how their minds were operating. Before I left the monastery to do the master's degree, my teachers were asking me to become a teacher. And that is because I think I suffered so much and practiced so hard. So I had that understanding.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that, this is what you've come to share. This is what you want to share. And you've obviously trained a lot of people, but they've not necessarily done what you've done there. Inevitably, they may have been attracted to this work without having the same level of suffering as you. Is it still something you feel you're able to pass on, that kind of understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that to truly help another, if you're coming from a spiritual or even psychological vantage point, you have to have truly done your own work.
Right.
And that requires being honest with yourself about when you're still not there. But the other thing is, which I didn't have the opportunity to experience, unfortunately, is that the practices of yoga really can change the nervous system. So you can gain insight and shift into yourself that can help somebody else in a slightly more expedient way than I was able to do. So that might not mean that you have that excruciating nature of suffering, but you have that deep level of transformation that you can share with another person based on lived experience. Because a big part of our training is academic, but the other part is experiential. It doesn't matter if you've been meditating for 10 years. You come to our training and we're going to make you work on who you are.
Right. Okay. Great. Okay. So look, a little while left. I wonder whether we can speak a little bit about men.
Okay. Let's speak about men.
Yeah. So I scanned down the practitioners on your website and there were two men out of about 100 practitioners, yeah. I wasn't surprised because, of course, I work in this field of, you know, integrated medicine. I know what happens. And, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if there weren't any. But such is the nature of the territory. And I mention it because it's my contention that men need support every bit as much as women. But society's conditioned them not to ask. They have to comply with some daft idea about what it means to be a strong man, you know, independent or something. But meanwhile, there's something like three times as many men committing suicide in this country. And, you know, three quarters of adults who go missing are men. You know, it's just like there's a disaster area in a way, in amongst that horrible picture of mental health we were talking about. The men have got the even worse deal of like, I'm supposed to do it on my own. I'm just interested to hear whether you have any particular thoughts about addressing this, whether you have initiatives you take on anyway in order to try and connect with men, and how we can make yoga therapy, for example, appealing to men.
Mm-hmm. Well, first to say that you're right. I mean, there's so many more women than men who have trained with me, but the website is not a reflection of everybody that has. So okay. There have been many more men that are actually on there and also many more women that are actually on there.
Okay.
So I have a colleague and she's currently a student, Joanna Fletcher, and she is bringing yoga and yoga therapy into rugby clubs.
Okay.
So I think that also is changing the perception of yoga, because you have these men that are seemed to be very manly and strong and macho,
rugby,
and alpha doing it.
Yep.
It changes things. I think that that's a big part of it. And I'm so excited about the work she's doing.
Sounds great.
I also, and I hope he doesn't mind that I give a shout out to him. So I have a current student who's ending the course soon. His name is Johnny Cheeseborough, and he identified this, and he is hopefully going to be writing a book on the value of yoga for men for reproductive health. I think that that's also an in. I know it's not mental health, but sometimes you have to go other areas to capture them.
Yes.
And he wrote a section for me on it, and it was phenomenal and so interesting. And he also linked mental health problems to sexual issues. And so he said he felt that men would really be interested if they could talk about virility being increased as a result of improved mental health through yoga.
Right.
And then there's the work as well that's being done with veteran populations that have PTSD.
Okay.
And that's another area when you have your military coming back, soldiers, Air Force, whatever it is, and they're practicing yoga. They're also very masculine people, you know, in society's eyes. But aside from all of that, I think that there needs to be a shift in the pressure that men have, which, you know, is age old. It's like you see it throughout cultures, in just holding it in, and a real recognition that it is okay to express having mental distress and that yoga can be a way to help them. And something that I say often is men that may not want to admit that they're struggling can know they can go to yoga and reduce their anxiety and depression. The two things that the research has shown consistently that yoga is most efficacious for is reducing anxiety and improving mood. So if they don't want to show up at the psychologist's office, if they don't want to tell their friends they're not okay, they can secretly go to a yoga class with that anxiety and find improvement.
That's great.
I think that's a really important message for men.
Yeah, excellent. Very good. Thank you for that.
Well,
okay, so just to round off, okay, I'm somebody who's been diagnosed with cancer. What is on offer from your organization across the country? How do I find out about it? Where do I get in touch?
So for my organization, we're primarily a training school. So people could come to our website and find our graduates. And our education is the most academic in Europe. And so I feel that if somebody had cancer and wanted to see a yoga therapist, which would be providing an individualized plan, looking at all of these different aspects of being, again, body, breath and energy, mind, joy and intuition and discernment, they could go to the website. And I feel they could have a good level of confidence that that individual would meet them where they are. Maggie's UK is offering yoga for cancer classes in conjunction with various hospitals and in their own centers, so people can go there. Macmillan IC is offering 12-week cancer courses in certain places. The Royal Free, in conjunction, is offering it. And there are also quite a lot of private yoga for cancer courses. I know that that means that people have to pay, available in the UK. In fact, consensus guidelines, which means that clinicians that work in a particular field come together and are making recommendations regarding yoga for cancer, are increasing. And so with that, we will also see more things cropping up. The European Oncology Society for Medicine, I think that's what it's called, recommends yoga for both reducing fatigue and improving mood. So as that happens, we're also going to see more clinicians referring it. And if, as Maggie's is really, really pushing and lobbying the government, yoga becomes part of treatment as usual for cancer patients, which is what they want. They want physical activity, but yoga would be within that umbrella. Mm-hmm. It would be available potentially to everyone, or maybe it would start to be, you know? So there's many, many different avenues. The possibility for yoga to be available for cancer patients in the UK is possibly greater than for any health condition yoga being available because of the work that these organizations are doing with the government. I really hope that
increases. Yeah, very good news. Very good news. Exciting. Well, of course, yeah, we've got a long way to go with exercise and cancer. All the evidence is there, been there for a long time, and other countries are showing us how to do it. But we are dragging our heels, as we do. So, this kind of push is just what we need. And for it to get acknowledged as being a regular part of the cancer pathway would be just amazing.
But you know that MD Anderson does that, right?
Oh, yeah.
The cancer. Yeah, it's part of treatment as usual. Yeah. And also, I think the Cleveland Clinic. So it's happening.
It's happening elsewhere. Yeah, absolutely. And it has been for some time. Yeah. But, as I say, we don't rush to these things in Britain. We have to drag screaming. Let's carry on with the dragging and see if we can get some action. So, fantastic. Great to talk to you, Heather. You're so enthusiastic and passionate about all this stuff. It's a real joy to talk to you about it. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners will pick to have a lot of your enthusiasm and realization that, you know, from your own personal experience, just how powerful this stuff can be for dealing with something really serious like cancer.
Well, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. And if even one person that has cancer or knows somebody that else has cancer recommends that they go to yoga and that person benefits, this will be even more meaningful to me than it already is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you, Robin.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Fantastic. Thank you. You too.
Bye. Bye-bye.
I did say in the intro that Heather was a powerhouse of enthusiasm, and you probably understand what I was talking about now. Do take a look at the Minded Institute's website, which is at themindedinstitute.com, where you can sign up to their newsletter, browse a mass of resources, or find a yoga therapist. Thanks for listening today. I do hope you can join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.